all must stand before the judgment seat of Christ. Whew. Today we have three baptisms, one of an adult who's the father then of both a tween and a teen who are being baptized. And so this means there will certainly be some tweens and teens in the congregation today, and who knows, maybe even later online checking this out. And so you would think that if I were going to preach a sermon in which I knew that there were going to be youth, tweens, and teens, that I might do everything in my power to avoid talking about God's judgment. Because there's nothing that seems to turn people off to religion, to Christianity, like talking about the judgment of God. And many people believe that Christians are judgy people. And yes, judgy is an adjective, so don't judge what I have said there. But I want to speak about judgment and judgy people. Indeed, if we are going to have youth today, I think this is something that they know well. Most of the life of a youth is the experience of being judged. From the moment youth walk onto the bus or into school, they know that all the eyes are evaluating what they have worn, how their hair is, what name brands that they have on their clothes. And then they go through the day and they are tested and quizzed, each a judgment on whether they have learned, whether they are ready to go on to the next thing. And then there are plenty of tryouts and auditions and practices and games and competitions, and each one is in itself a judgment of how they are growing and how they are progressing. To be a youth is to live every day under judgment. They know it so well. I wish, though, I could tell the tweens and the teens that are listening today that it will somehow change dramatically. But to be an adult is as well to experience judgment. The judgment of our coworkers, our bosses, as well as our family members. It's a kind of a fun and crazy thing to see my parents and in-laws try to give us parenting advice, but not do so in a judgy way. And now that I'm getting older, I have the joy of having my own children judge my parenting style, right? It just gets better and better. Throughout our whole lives, we experience the judgment of other people. Yes, we know judgment, and in so many ways, this sort of impacts everything. I think it's fair to say that in the last year, we have experienced a tremendous amount of judgment of how we've all handled the pandemic. I think all of us have judged others and certainly felt judged by others for what we chose to do and chose not to do. And we certainly see that in our political sphere, it is nothing but judgment. It is no longer simply, I disagree with you, but I believe you are a bad person for thinking differently than myself. Again, everywhere we go in our culture, we are just saturated with judgment of ourselves and of other people. And I think underneath this is simply that life has sin and life has brokenness, and we are moral animals, and we will always be assessing and judging others. And so what then to do about this reality of judgment? Well, for many, the way forward is what we might call the curated life. The life where we make sure that everything looks right for everyone else, that somehow we can transcend, go over top the judgment of others. And a generation or two ago, this simply meant mowing your lawn and having it so green and so nice and having your flowers in your front look pretty. But now with social media, this is something different. This is a 24/7 preoccupation of us to create an avatar, to create a self that actually is good and wholesome. A world in which ice cream cones don't have the cones fall off, right? A world in which cans don't get slammed in car doors. A world in which there are unicorns prancing around. You know, the world that we... I was with some parents the other day, and... We were doing what middle-aged men do, and we were lamenting about how good it was when we were children, right? I'm already at this age where I can say when I was a kid, right? So we were having a when I was a kid conversation. And of course, this brought up social media. And the one man said, you know, have a friend, and this year during the pandemic, they chose to homeschool their kids. And I would look at their feed every week, and I was jealous because it looked like they were having such wholesome family fun, and I actually felt guilty that my wife and I hadn't chosen this path for our children. And so then this person, he goes to the person who was homeschooling their children, and he said, wow, you know, you guys looked like you had such a great year. And this mom shook her head and said, no, it was a nightmare. The whole thing was a nightmare, and I need my kids to go back to school as soon as possible. But in this phone life, which is very much a phony life, there was such effort into making sure that it looked good. What do we do about this reality of sin, brokenness, and our judgment of each other around it? Well, the one thing we do is we pursue the curated life, the phony life, where we again try to transcend it and make sure that our life just looks great for everybody else. I don't know about you, but that's a pretty exhausting lie to live. And so I'd like to offer a different way. And I'd like to call that the sacramental life. The sacramental life where we believe and acknowledge that, yes, there is brokenness in the world. There is sin, but God in Christ is doing something about that. And so in, with, and under this broken tapestry of life, somehow God is stitching us together. And the image is not of a curated sort of social media feed, but the image is of a stained glass where there's these broken pieces that somehow are bound together. And although they are individually broken, they somehow assemble something that is whole and that is beautiful and that allows God's light to shine forth in splendor. Again, I'd like to offer, in contrast to the curated feed, the stained glass, in contrast to the iPhone or the phone life, the sacramental life, in which somehow God is present in, with, and under, in spite of, yet because of, the brokenness that we have made in this world. This last week, I went and I visited a family where the patriarch of the family is dying. And it was one of those uncomfortable scenes I don't think any family walks into, but you get there over time. And the man is dying in their living room in a hospital bed with all sorts of tubes hooked up to him. And of course, there's that smell. And there's different kinds of fluids and medicine everywhere. And it's horribly unsettling. And such compassion and mercy for the family were in me. And so we sat then together as a family. And it was clear that there was nothing about this scene that was ready for social media. Nothing about this that they wanted to broadcast to the world, that this is where they were and this is the life that they were living. These were the smells they were smelling. These were the sights that they were seeing. This is not what they wanted to share on a mountaintop. It was broken. And death is near. And they're certainly fatigued and overwhelmed. But we had this conversation in which what came forward was their deep love for this patriarch, their care and concern for each other and the burdens they were bearing, their desire to do the right thing, the desire for this man to be able to die in dignity. And then there was this friend who had just stopped by, and this friend was giving them the information where they could receive medical care at this point. And we were talking about the VA. We were talking about hospice. And so, yes, it was this moment where everything in life was falling apart, again, where death was knocking on the door. Yet somehow in the midst of all this, there was this goodness. There was this profound and deep love. That's the sacramental life. That's the new creation that Paul writes about. Where, yes, there is this world that is decaying, but yet God's love somehow permeates and saturates and breaks open and erupts forth, shining through the stained glass, shining through the brokenness of our existence. But what does this have to do, of course, then, with judgment? What does this have to do with God's judgment? Well, for me, how do we get from the curated feed to the stained glass? How do we get from the phone life to the sacramental life? Well, of course, there maybe are some habits we could change. But most fundamentally, I actually believe it's about recognizing and seeing God as judge in our life. Paradoxically. For when we realize that it's finally God and only God whose opinion about us matters. Again, we realize it is only God whose opinion about us matters, who can judge us for what we have done. This can free us from the million of fake judges that we've filled our lives with. Can set us free. And I realize that acknowledging that God judges us can be something that for some people just puffs them up and they somehow amplify their own sense of judgment in their life. But the thing is, for me, I've come to recognize that not only is God the only true judge, but God is the only judge we will encounter in our life who has actually promised us mercy. Nobody else has promised us mercy in life. God and God alone has promised, poured out in Jesus Christ. Indeed, in Jesus, we know that the one who evaluates us in the end has already decided in the cross that we are enough, has already decided in the cross that we are worth his very life, has laid down his life that we might be with him now and yet even forever. I think meditating on this and recognizing this finally allows us to accept ourselves and others and to begin to see that, yes, there is brokenness and there is sin in this world, but that God is somehow active yet, binding us together. And so you may have somebody, especially if you are a youth, come to you and say, "Hey, why are you a Christian? They are such judgmental people." And at this question, you can look at them and you can say, "You know, that actually sounds like a bit of a judgy question." And kind of wink and laugh to let them know you're really not offended. And then you can tell them, "You know, I think there's actually judgment everywhere. It seems like everywhere we turn, we're judging others and being judged. So I don't know if Christians are really the problem, but I would say yes. Yes, there are some who use their faith as a weapon against others. But for me, I am a Christian because I believe that judgment doesn't have the final word, but that God's grace does. And that God's grace has come to me and comes to all of us in Jesus Christ every day. And in that hope and in that love, I choose to live." Amen.